we wanted to change the company from a closure system to a high-performance fit system that basically helped change the way athletes perform and that we could prove it scientifically. With Alpine Ski, we did not go to any brand for 2.5 years. We built the idea, we took a shell structure, we patented it, we built it, so what we would call it is an open source model. So our philosophy is we don't go in and collaborate until we already have the idea we want to move them to. 90% of everyone in the Tour de France has integrated BOA, double BOA systems. If they don't have that, they know there's a disadvantage. It doesn't mean they won't win. So we want to be respectful, but it does give an advantage.
This is the ProCo 360 podcast for people who love Colorado and love hearing from Colorado's most inventive and successful entrepreneurs. I'm Dave Tabor, and this is a special episode with a live audience here at the headquarters of BOA. All right. Now, most listeners know BOA, or at least have seen a BOA fit system on snowboard boots or golf shoes, running shoes, maybe on snowshoes, or even a back brace. So I'm going to be talking with CEO Sean Neville about a bunch, including two areas and real focus, one of them being the innovative performance fit lab and the joys and complexities of integrating the BOA fit system into products of huge famous brands. And there are so many that I'm sure, Sean, you'll mention some as we get into the conversation tonight. Sean and I did the very first live ProCo 360 podcast here 5 years ago, and it's so great to be back. And before we started, Sean was saying that he listened to the episode, and what, you were reflecting?
I was, yes.
He's going to have longer answers, I promise, as we go. So, Sean, are you ready to get going?
Yes.
All right. Yes, here we go. All right, so everybody knows, or at least thinks they know, sort of the origin of BOA, starting as, I was going to say, a shoelace replacement. Sean quickly corrected me. No, BOA really started as a closure, a new closure for footwear, right? But maybe you could speak more to the mission and the origin.
Yeah, so the origin was in 2001. Gary Hammerslag really saw an opportunity. One of it was that he and his father had sold their catheter company, and he wanted to live in Colorado, and he loved snowboarding. So I think the intersection of all three of those was finding a solution for a problem that he saw, which was the real challenge of, at the time, closing snowboard boots. And so that was working with brands like K2 and Vans, an opportunity to see a business model that could create a better solution.
Yeah, and I'm going to jump right into the Performance Fit Lab, because last time we were talking, you said this has really changed the face of where BOA is going. You know, it seems like, well, first of all, is that a reasonable statement? Is that really the future for BOA?
No. It is a reason for us to become a high-performance company. So I would call the Performance Fit Lab is something that we derived 6 years ago, which was we wanted to change the company from a closure system to a high-performance fit system that basically helped change the way athletes perform and that we could prove it scientifically. And so when we thought about that, the first aspect of that is that we already had great products that were durable, they worked well, but we really did not have anything other than qualitative assessment of whether or not it actually helped athletes perform. So we created a hypothesis of if we could prove these three movements of humans and that we could actually impact them, that we'd actually evolve and become potentially a world-class performance fit company. But that was more of a proof point that could also be a foundation for innovation.
Got it. Now, I'm going to ask the audience to indulge here for a minute, because you put together a white paper to really, or several white papers, to really prove that the technology existed to measure the difference. And this is an excerpt, and I'm only going to read one, and forgive me, it's long. So bear with me. Each athlete performed the movements in 4 shoe upper closures, standard, lace replacement, Y-wrap, and tri-panel. Movement completion time, ground contact time, peak eccentric rate of force development, peak concentric, GRF, P peak Concentric COM power, eccentric work, and concentric work were measured. The Y-Wrap configuration and the tri-panel configuration delivered improvements between 3 and 9% over the standard closure, depending on the movement tested and variable of interest. So, is that proof?
It's all relative to context. Basically, I'd like to step back and talk about the mission of the company, because I think that is a byproduct of who we want to become, as opposed to an action. So when we really looked at the future of the company 7 years ago, and when we had our conversation January 17th, 2019, we were in the midst of evolving the company and proving human performance. Our vision statement is inspiring and enabling peak performance, which means that can we actually improve athletes' performance? And so the essence of that came from our values, which is we're pioneers, pushing the limits of human performance, doing it with care and excellence. But then the mission statement that we built around our products is that we create disruptive, innovative, high-quality products and solutions that transform fit and performance. And we do it with the best brands in the world making the best gear better, and we do it by getting dialed in. So I think before we get into the detail of that, that foundation of who we are, what we stand for, and what we're going to become was the impetus for actually not just the Performance Fit Lab, but innovation around 2D and 3D design, building deep relationship with brand partners, understanding the end consumer. This is one of those elements of that proof point. So when we thought about it, the Performance Fit Lab is not, it is a critical foundation to support our vision, our values, and mission. And so it was why it was one of the most important things that we built early on with many other things, as opposed to that specificity. But to answer your question, the answer is yes, but under the context of what we wanted to achieve for athletes and our brands.
Got it. Well, you know, it seems like you've gotten there because while we're going to talk about some of your brands more, Sean, it seems like you've gotten there because, like, I think about a golfer 25 years ago using 25, you know, clubs then and all that. Like, the best golfer in the world could not win now with those clubs. And I'm wondering if BOA has gotten to a point where the best athletes in the world who need good closures on their feet.
Fit systems.
Thank you. This is great. Thank you. So who need the best fits, right? They're not going to be able to win if they're not using BOA. Is that likely?
Maybe. I think the question is, can they be better? So the aspect when we think of alpine ski and world-class athletes, we think of snowboarders, we think of cyclists in the World Cup. We think of mountaineers in the toughest conditions in the world. We do not want to distinguish who wins or loses. We want to distinguish who is better prepared to win. So the aspect is, when you think about a golfer, an athlete, the way that our products work and the way that we want to wrap and integrate and create micro-adjustability creates an advantage. It doesn't mean you're going to win, but you have an advantage.
Right, but if you took, ultimately, it's hard to deny, based on anywhere from 3% improvement to 9% improvement, that if you took the same athletes and put one in BOA fit system and the other one not, you have a difference, right?
You have a difference. But again, the beauty of performance is there are many variables. So we would never be arrogant enough to say, nor should any golf club manufacturer or any company, we want to position athletes to be in the best position to win. They still have to have desire. They have to have nutrition. They have to do everything. But what we deliver is an advantage if they take advantage of everything else. And so the essence of that in everything we do, so 90% of everyone in the Tour de France has integrated BOA, double BOA systems. If they don't have that, they know there's a disadvantage. It doesn't mean they won't win. So we want to be respectful, but it does give an advantage.
Well, I appreciate that. And to me, I really am expecting that in the next Olympics, virtually everybody who wears shoes is going to have a BOA closure system.
Well, hopefully helmets, bracing, boots.
For sure.
We think.
So you must be, and I was talking, I think, was it Jenna I was talking to? But that big screen sometimes is used to watch big sporting events. It must be so fun for you to see people competing successfully wearing your product.
It's, you know, what's the most exciting thing is going places around the world, sitting in Shenzhen, China, and watching a badminton event that's world-class, and you see everyone there wearing an integrated boa, or even table tennis. Or I was with my wife, Alex, who's here tonight supporting me, so I'm trying to do a good job, and my sister. Got the family, got to be there. But being in Adelaide just 2 months ago for a significant tour event, 80% of all the athletes wearing boa. I talked to them. They want to take pictures. They're excited. And to go everywhere around the world, because we're very fortunate to be with athletes and wherever they are, that's pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, it is. And it's got to be fun to watch for your whole team. I understand it gets kind of rowdy in here when you're seeing athletes wearing boa, competing and succeeding. That's got to be so fun.
It's a cool thing.
Yeah. Let's switch gears. I want to talk about brand partnerships, because that's really the core of a lot of what you're doing. And first of all, talk about how boa decides who to partner with and how to, well, let's just start with that.
So if I look at the second part of our mission, which is very simply, we make the best gear even better. So the simplicity of that is broken down in terms of the best gear with the best brands that are most innovative, that work with the best athletes in the world. Making it better means that we have architecture of the products, that we work with every brand and build products for the future that actually make the best products and brands even better. So we don't go to trade shows. On the podcast 5 years ago, I said we will have 20% less partners, and we have 19% less partners than we had 5 years ago. I was off by 1%. And our business has almost tripled from 5 years ago, because it's focused. It's about athletes. So that really creates a guiding force for who we work with and making sure that we have deep, powerful relationships with them.
Well, and when you work with brands, they tend to be, I mean, a lot of the brands you work with have product models that go from maybe less expensive, but you tend to isolate your product integration at the upper end of their product line, right?
Yeah, we actually, I know it sounds a little boring, but we have 39 product subsegments, 4 price lanes for each product in 42 countries, and built across 9 industries. So we really try to be very prescribed. We have strategies for each, but if we don't start at the top of their line, then we don't start with them. So if we're not established with the best products, we can waterfall it, but we don't go too far. But being in that premium position, making sure it's for top athletes, allows BOA to be perceived by consumers and the brands as truly making their best gear better.
Yeah. Now, to do that, though, I've also had conversations with your team. Like, my initial thought was, okay, they take a product, whatever it is, whether it's snowboards or running shoes, somewhere boots or running shoes, and take out the laces and put in, and there's so much more involved in sort of a collaborative engineering process, right? Can you talk about that?
Yeah, we're fortunate that we're not a lace replacement company, which is good.
Yes, you've corrected me. Thank you. But with the companies that you're talking about, right? I mean, it's so involved from an engineering perspective.
I'll give you a good example. Let me take my shoe off.
Okay.
So my simple lesson about footwear is that footwear for hundreds of years was built on the premise that you have this little U, and you have laces, or you have Velcro, and it clamps down on your foot. And all it does is create a negative impact on your performance. And so the challenge is that our belief was that if you look at ski boots as a great example, ski boot actually is a shell. It actually floats around your product and lock the heel. If you have a clamp or if you have some form of buckle that clamps down, it actually inhibits your performance. If you look at a product like this, which is Ultra, and also a Colorado-based company, let's go, is that the ability to actually wrap around the midfoot radically changes the way geometry works and your biometrics work. And when you can micro-adjust it, you can actually connect your midfoot. You can actually connect the heel. And importantly for all of you, do you know what also is horrible? Is when you actually have the front of the foot where it actually gets crunched. It actually opens what we call the toe box. It allows it to move. And that allows your body to breathe and your body to move. So in every single aspect, this is what we work with our brands around, and that's what creates a high-performance product. It doesn't mean that we won't provide a classic solution, but it truly works, and consumers love it.
Yeah, yeah. Now,
may I put my foot back, shoe back
yeah.
on?
So from an engineering perspective, while I'm asking this question, I mean, what does happen when a company decides that, or you decide together mutually that you want to partner?
Yeah.
What's the process? Do they send you shoes? Do you bring them in? How does that work? Where you actually design that closure system?
Well, the what? The FIT system.
Thank you. You know, the next time I say that, everybody just shout out FIT system. Thank you.
We don't want to be arrogant. We respect the responsibility of our team is to understand every brand, their brand architecture, their strategy, their design features, and how do we come to them with ideas. We typically, first of all, we really don't start new brands. We already really right now are with the brands we want to be with the next 10 to 15 years. There are very few that we would target. So we're very fortunate. We have a very high retention. But each season we go with new designs that are impacting what we've learned in our Performance Fit Lab. By the way, if you just move this slightly or you apply it differently, if you apply a different material, and then how do we make it look cool? So right now we try to bring 85 to 90% of the new ideas for new products to them first. They'll come to our facility, they'll come to our Fit Lab, they'll come to our design team, and we'll collaborate to build the future.
So how does that work if you've got, how many snowboard brands do you work
Nine.
With?
Nine major.
So how does that work? Who do you pick to say, well, we got this great idea, we're going to this one?
So what we do first is we imagine the idea, we patent it, not just our system, but today we have 54 design patents. We had zero 5 years ago. So what we do with Alpine Ski, we did not go to any brand for 2.5 years. We built the idea, we took a shell structure, we patented it, we built it. So what we would call it is an open source model. So our philosophy is we don't go in and collaborate until we already have the idea we want to move them to. So conceptually, we then will come to them so we don't box them in. We say, just so you know, we don't go in and just start from scratch. We've already done our homework. Just so you know, this is what we've patented already. Let's work around it. What it allows us to do with each brand is to make sure they have nowhere they can play, where they have room, and then we move the market.
So where do they have room? Because if you've gone to them with essentially the design for the FIT system that's going to work in a hard shell, how are they going to differentiate going forward besides color?
So you've got the inner shell. You've got application of how that works. You've got how their actually boot construction works, how their last structure works in terms of certain consumers that they support. They can actually, there's obviously variations of it that they can work with that actually deliver performance for their athletes. And they also have franchises that have a basic foundation that we don't want to alter. We then help them figure out how to work within that. So, we just meetings with, all those major brands, when we lay it out, we say, here's the room to play, but here's the most important thing. Would they know that there's got to be consistency in the application so that the consumer believes in it? And if they're going to be able to charge an additional $50 for an incredible fit system, there's got to be some degree of consistency, like Gore-Tex. If Gore-Tex, it's guaranteed to keep you dry on some products but not others, not so good. But for us, it's got to deliver an incredibly high-performance fit, and we help them get there. That's why we approve every product.
Got it. Well, one question that just keeps going around in my mind, even as prepared and all this, even from our very last time we talked, is to the extent that you're doing the engineering to incorporate the FIT system, is it making it harder? I know you just said they all have different platforms, different things, but does it make that product category sort of start to align to where it's harder to differentiate one brand from the next?
Ooh, that's a great question. So if you go into a store and you look at running shoes and you look at the wall, what percent of the products have a stupid little U-throat and laces on it?
I don't know,
98.5%. Okay, if you looked at every ski boot for the last 40 years, how many had a four-buckle boot that killed you? Is that called sameness? We actually create more differentiation and the ability to innovate around our system that buckles ever did. How about Velcro? How many different variations of that? So I could argue that our ability to innovate and provide that, we also can provide custom applications of those, gives them vastly more ability to innovate and get a higher price than try to go to another buckle manufacturer.
So what do you do, though, when, and I asked you this 5 years ago, too, but what do you do, though, when people go in and they go shopping at a retailer and they say, I want a BOA snowboard boot, or, oh, I see now they're an Alpine, I want a BOA Alpine boot. How do these manufacturers deal with that sentiment?
Our goal is really simple. We see ourselves working in concert with, not in conflict with, our brands. their name comes first. Our name comes second.
Yeah, but the customer doesn't always think that. The customer sometimes wants a BOA X.
It's not a horrible thing. But the point is, we want to respect our brand partners. Part of it is that we have 20% less brand partners than we worked with 5 years ago. One of the issues I had when we used to go to trade shows, we were pitching our system. Today, we curate. We have deep partnerships. We work with them. We want to help them achieve their goals. So what I think is really powerful is that they know that we're not out there going after new brands and businesses. We want to build a deeper relationship. So we want to inculcate all the innovators. Come on in. And those are the companies that they're proud to work with us, and we're proud to work with them. And then we market with them. We invest with them. We do design work with them. And I'm not sure how many buckle companies are doing that.
Yeah. So does it feel like an exclusive club now?
It's inclusively exclusive. there's an essence of that, which is we're not arrogant and we're inclusive about it. But if you meet these criteria and you believe in that and we work together around our collective mission, then it's awesome.
And some of your brands must have approached you and said, what's it going to take to be exclusive? Right? Haven't they done that? Some?
Sure. Every meeting. Do you know what they want to? Yeah. What do you want? I want it exclusive, less expensive, faster, and cheaper, of course. The issue is what we do is we have consistent pricing for every partner around the world. We have a discipline of how we operate, no matter your size. So we have a very, I wouldn't call it egalitarian, but we have a very consistent, honest approach that we give to the entire market so that everybody, I believe, trusts us and the way we go to market.
Oh, well, you used the Gore-Tex example, so I'm going to bring that back, because what seems to me that's happened with Gore-Tex is that it was a very high-end product, still is high-end product, and companies, either to save money or to create their own differentiation or to take Gore-Tex's name off of their product, for whatever reason, they had great incentive to invent something else that worked. So are you creating incentive for even the brands that partner with you now to try to get out of this relationship?
I sure hope not.
But you know what I'm asking,
right? No, I'm being semi-facetious. Yeah. So in 2015, we had 54 patents. Today, we have 267 and 54 patents around our design. We are constantly innovating every one of our platforms. We almost think like a pharmaceutical company. So the aspect of every single product line we have, whether it's 10, 15, 20 years, we want to make sure that everything we're building is creating a better product for the future. So if somebody wants to, and there's always going to be people that work around the edges around development, we have two powerful differentiators. Our brand that has consistency with our lifetime warranty, working with the best brands in the world, and our constant innovation. And that aspect allows us to play. We 5 years ago, we had 90% of the global market for the premium business in the world. Today, we have 96.
That's impressive.
And we're three times bigger.
Yeah.
So the proof of that is our brand partners see us as we take it very seriously, that we are not out there chasing business. And so a fool's errand is chasing private label. Private label will commoditize the business. I just had a board meeting last week, and we talked about the essence of what a fool's errand is and in life. And so, you know, what I think Gore-Tex's challenge is that if you look at the fundamentals of their membrane benefit is, you know, they're only surviving, and they're great, basically on their brand. We have a product that you can actually see, you can feel it, and you can hear it. Gore-Tex, you have to have a logo to actually to know that it's in there. And I'm not disrespecting them. I think Gore-Tex is amazing, and no disrespect to them. But we now have double the patents that Gore-Tex has. And we have 70 engineers building the future, and we don't really have any competition. But we're thinking about the future of more sustainable products, more efficient products, more elegant products, and material science. How do we integrate them? So we're very humble about it. Like, we could sit here and say, we're awesome, we've got it, but we're really focused on making sure we're pushing ourselves for the future.
Let's take a quick break. I'm going to remind listeners, this is ProCo 360, named Best Colorado Business Podcast the last 3 years. I'm your host, Dave Tabor, and this is the podcast for people who love Colorado and the stories of Colorado businesses and entrepreneurs. This episode with a live audience here at BOA headquarters. This is home of BOA and its Performance Fit Lab. A quick shout out to ProCo 360 sponsors. Kinsley Meetings is ProCo 360's longest running sponsor. My friends at Via Technologies host the ProCo 360 website, and they fix it when I break it. Colorado Biz Magazine and ProCo 360 partner to grow our audiences. And most recently, Denver Angels and ProCo 360 formed a collaboration to bring some of their portfolio companies to ProCo 360. So thanks to all my partners. And I want to shift gears. We've talked a lot about brand partnering. I have one more question about innovation, because it confounds me to look at the thin wire that you use in your fit system. And I wonder, how can that not break? And I just wonder, you must have tremendous material engineers here.
Well, we have. So when we think about an example, this cable, which can actually hold over 600 pounds without breaking. And actually, the power pressure should be no greater than 200, 220 pounds. But at the same time, so we have not only our internal engineers, we have external partners. We have a partner called Asahi, which is a world-class developer of medical devices and our products. And then we have our testing team, which doesn't probably get enough credit. We have 18 people dedicated every day to breaking anything they can.
That sounds like a fun job. That sounds like a great job.
And so
they're probably good at it.
They created the foundation of making sure that BOA was engineered to perform in the toughest conditions. Every product we have has to withstand double the impact and double the life. And that's why we have a low warranty rate. But that aspect is, so when you think about that, the steel laces that are actually integrated, whether it's got a nylon coating or an application, this almost could, you know, this is actually the same foundation as a cable car. And how do you make it thin enough to make it work? So that was a lot of work, is how do you make sure that it performs incredible? So whether it's a textile lace, because we now have textile laces, they used to be cables on snowboard boots. They look a lot more elegant and they're as powerful. So we're really fortunate to have innovation partners internally and externally.
Yeah. I'm just impressed at the dial. I mean, you can play with this all day and it works, right?
It's a toy, yes.
Yeah. But it's also easily repairable, correct? I mean, you can send out a repair kit. Somebody can fix it themselves if they need to. And it's easy. This one's made to pop off, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. Almost all of our modern platforms pop off and come back on if there's a challenge. And that was a big issue with snowboard boots. 5 years ago, the product we launched actually helped change that, which was real difficult for folks, that it popped off and you had to go repair it. Now you just plop it back on.
Wow. That's super cool.
It's kind of cool, I think.
Yeah, it is. All right. I want to talk, because I've talked with a number of your people and we heard some cheering earlier. The culture at BOA, you talk about in video, you say BOA culture is collectively one of our greatest superpowers. So talk about that and how you think about that within this sort of an engineering-driven company.
Well, it's not engineering-driven. We never look at anything as one thing. It's all holistic. We're global. We're not international. We're not about one thing. We're about everything. And I think the most important thing is that we kick ass and we care. So I look at that in the aspect of what makes our culture, and everyone says our culture is great. It's very professional. It's got an edge, even though we're leading the marketplace, and we care. When we talk about the community, the environment, each other, our partners, we really work hard. We have 1,100 workers that work in the factories of our partners. We know everything they're doing. We challenge our partners to make sure that makes sense. How do we make sure everyone's winning in the ecosystem? So I think this combination of humility, of really understanding of all the people in our ecosystem creates a really cool vibe. And everybody wants to do really well. So I think it's really the alchemy of that. I never say we're an engineering company, a design company, a finance-driven company, a commercial company. I actually think any company that says that is actually wrong. And by the way, innovation is a rhetorical term. Our job is to improve human performance. Period. That's it. Full stop. has nothing. Innovation's a shallow word. Improving human performance is a beautiful essence of what we do that drives everything we do, and that's with the brands, our products, the innovation, and working with athletes. We have a very cool group of athletes that we work with, whether it's in our performance for the lab or we work with our brands to make sure that we are working with them to feel like, wow, I can make them better.
You think the athletes, then it sounds like you're saying that, the athletes that help your product develop are actually part of your culture too.
100%. We just had our Pioneer Award event, which was really cool a couple of weeks ago. You know, we had the founder's wife of Burton here, Donna Carpenter. She was crying up there. Well, we also gave an award to our founder's wife. We also had five other brands here. We had four world-class athletes, and we also had all the world-class athletes who were Boehm crew recognized, and it's one ecosystem.
Yeah. Now, what role does employee ownership play? I understand 10% or more of the company is owned by employees.
Mm-hmm. Just over 99.9% of our employees own the company. Every single person in our company has ownership in our, we hope that you're here for less than 6 months, you have ownership in BOA. And it's one of the things that when we recapitalized the company 3 years ago, we wanted to partner when we sold the majority stake to another company from one private equity firm to a public company, was that in BOA's ecosystem that everybody is a shareholder. And it's important and it's meaningful, not just X. It's we have a very small pool and we hope everyone feels that.
Yeah. Audience, it's time. If you'd like to come on down and just come to the microphone, we're going to activate it. Your question will be part of the episode, so please don't be shy. If you've got a question, come on down. I've got one in the meantime. No one's even moving. Come on. There we go. Thank you, Nan. All right, Sean, as Nan comes up, I got a question for you. And that is, I understand that the Alpine boot was a different engineering feat than others you've had in the past. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so yeah, the challenge, and when we launched the project formally at the end of 2017, was there were two challenges. One was we had to create a product that could actually withstand almost three times the torque and tension of anything we ever created in our past. And could we do it with a size that was not so bulbous that it actually was out here? And could we also do it in a way that, from a cost standpoint, it made sense? So my first presentation to the board was pretty impressive. I said, we're going to invest in two things. I don't know if we're going to make any money. One was we got to prove scientifically that this company is a high-performance company, and we're going to invest in Alpine Ski. They thought I came because I came from an athletic background that we're going to just put ourselves on kids' shoes, which we almost did on a big scale. And I said, by the way, it's only going to cost $15 to $20 million. And it's going to take 7 years to pay out. But if we do it, this will be a billion-dollar company someday because we can get it done. So it was more about a belief in the future. And fortunately, the board supported it, and I'm still hanging out.
Excellent. All right. Please step up to the mic, Nan.
So congrats, Sean, on all your success. Everybody at BOA, what an amazing company and a very cool mission. And I love the mission of working with the athletes for their better performance. But I'm sitting here thinking, wouldn't it be cool if I'm biased because my son's in the Army, if these Army Rangers and these Army, you know, infantry enlisted as well as the officer level could have a fit system for these boots. You talk about old school, and they all suffer from cellulitis when they go in these long rucks and stuff. Have you ever thought about working with the military and trying to get something going at some point?
Well, almost 25% of our total business globally is in the workwear market and tactical. Almost all of it's in Europe. So actually, all the advanced workwear companies, as well as governments, are very forward. So we actually have a very strong foundation. We're actually in Korea. We've had numerous programs there. So from a fit system standpoint, they love it. So it's clearly an area that we can deliver. And actually, when you look at boots, I think I've got a boot around here somewhere.
Well, I saw there's a picture up there.
Yeah. So, yeah. And when you talk about, and those are the old boots. Now, when you wrap it over the midsection, mm-hmm. So, and we can create a dual BOA for those, I call them an athlete, a workman, a workwoman, is that actually, we've proven that that delivers less pressure on their body. They can move better. So it's a rapidly growing business. So we don't actively go out there and try to get every military or every workwear, but we have teams around the world. We have teams dedicated to what we combine workwear, and we include tactical within that. So it's a great point. And, you know, especially when we're big in outdoor boots, if we're on a mountaineer that's basically climbing Mount Everest, and really almost every mountaineering boot, we have 95% of the mountaineering market. Although, because those expeditions, you've got to have BOA, because it's very difficult to readjust. So okay. We're cool, Nan.
Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. Come on down. I've got some more questions, but I'm really open to yours. So come on down if you've got one. Here comes somebody. As she's coming down, I got a question for you, because, you know, Proco 360 is focused on Colorado business. And so as BOA has grown, to what extent is Colorado still, and you're global, to what extent is Colorado still an important place in your heart, in your business?
Colorado's our epicenter. You know, Steamboat Springs was where we were born. And we rededicated ourselves to being a company. When we talked about peak performance, the double entendre was about staying close to the mountains. When we're in the Alps, when we're here, we're actually, whether it's in Japan, Korea, but really at the end of the day, Colorado is our epicenter. And our people are very proud. When we actually have our vans around the world, Born in Colorado is actually on every van that we have. When we go to events, when we're anywhere in the world, or if we're in Italy, and that logo and that connection is really important.
Good to hear. Please.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing the BOA story.
Oh, thank you.
I'm curious to hear, once a product is in the market, how do you gather customer feedback, since you're not selling the product direct to consumer and you're working alongside brands? How do you understand both, like, specific feedback on the BOA fit system, but also how people are interacting with the product out in their different sports?
Yeah, it's a great question. In some industries, I would say we know as much or more than the brands, because we have teams that are out in hundreds and hundreds of stores, because we also train in specialty shops, in snow sports, in cycling especially, where we have a strong presence. So we're out there all the time. We also have a portal that we connect with, that we just launched actually last year, to make sure we can create constant feedback. The other aspect is through our warranty, because we actually, 40% of all the global warranty claims come through our facilities, and we turn around in one day. We ask them questions. We know what's happening. So we can draw a correlation to warranty to usage. So even when we looked at, like, the cycling market as it shifted, we draw correlations to people that have warranty claims to what usage was. But we're really always out there, including myself. I'm a retail junkie, and I'd like to just acknowledge that. But for our whole team is always being out there and being critical. So I always ask what's not working, what's not. And so even in stores, I come in as skeptical. I think getting our team to find the truth the best we can. And the truth is always there. We just don't always want to find it. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and so keeping the team real about that versus, and even in meetings, I always want to really acknowledge awesome work by the team, but then it's like, what's not working? And it's okay. So I think we have a culture of having those conversations. I think it's a lot of energy, because I think if people think they have to just give good news, I think it's actually zaps energy. So I think maybe it's just keeping it real.
Cool. Thanks for the answer.
Sure. My team, would you disagree with that? Probably. I just want to hear the good news. Ryan, no?
Cool. All right. There's still, if you want to ask a question, come on down. If you want to make a comment, come on down. But I have a couple of questions that have really been on my mind. One is, what's the craziest application for BOA, the craziest idea that made you just laugh?
Well, we have a lot of applications for different apparel products that I think are always kind of funny, whether it's kind of a goofy application on a golf hat that's got multiple dials. So in places like, it's interesting, in Japan and Korea especially, BOA has a dominant position on footwear, like 70%. So they're always looking for kind of interesting applications. So we have to say no most of the time. So we always say, does it improve fit? I'm trying to think of, like, wacky ideas. I think they're more inventive ideas, but they're not tied to fit. So a lot of them don't come to me now, because I think we have a pretty good filter.
Yeah. You must have. Anything you've tried that you thought would be good, that you thought would work for fit, and just didn't play out that way?
No, because we scientifically prove it first.
Talk about that.
So we have to have a hypothesis that's proven prior to actually go to market. And we want to patent it. So we don't throw anything against the wall. We don't have any spaghetti here. We throw no spaghetti against the wall. Everything is fundamentally proven before we go to a market. We would never go to a brand partner without a proven position and a hypothesis of what it can be. Otherwise, we're posers in the market. And if they bring it up, we'll say, let us think about that. If we hadn't, and we don't just automatically move forward, we then study it, assess it, and come back. And I think it allows them to know that we try to be a gatekeeper for performance.
Any thoughts about future motorization?
It's a dumb idea.
And why is that?
Because actually the elegance of, so over-engineering actually, first of all, is unsustainable, has challenges. And when we think about the elegant usage of our product, and by the way, we only have 3.5% of our addressable market today, and it already is relatively expensive to consumers. So if you looked at, they were fooling around before I got here with an idea for cycling boots. Nike did a product that we actually had worked on that cost $600. It doesn't make sense. So the truth is that if it's an elegant solution, and if we have 3.5% of our market that we can deliver and create better products, trying to actually over-engineer or be too cute about it, I think actually can be a deterrent to what that product represents. So I would say that the greenfield for us is getting every product in the world to move away from a youth throat into a wrap structure. If we get 10% of the world footwear, and then we haven't even talked about helmet technology because we can revolutionize the yoke structure and how that applies. We haven't even started with performance bracing and rethinking how that applies to the product and customizing that and delivering a way in which your body can be regulated. We haven't even started. So those factors are truthful. They're tied to performance. And this will be a $1 billion-plus company. And even though we've tripled in the last 5 years, we've only just begun.
Wow. What's you're talking about? You've only just begun, and I know you can't share everything. But before I ask what I think is going to be the last question, first, do you have a question? All right.
Come on down.
Come on, Cheryl.
Doing anything, have you thought anything about working with prosthetics and people that need artificial support?
Yeah, it's a great question. We actually had done some work, and we worked through a third-party company. And the challenge was for us is that we were a part of a system as opposed to the fully integrated system. So we decided at the time, even when I came here, we were on some prosthetics. We said at some point, if we're going to go in, we're going to go big. We're going to design the entire aspect. Our concern was the prosthetics that we were on, we could not control, and we felt that there was liability and challenges with it. So when I was thinking about the future, we said, let's pull back, but we will be there someday. We think bracing technology and helping those end consumers are important. But what we don't want to do is just deliver a dial. We need to think about everything that relates to the regulation of the body. When you think about prosthetics, it's incredibly important because the challenge, as you know, is the body moves. And it's a challenge. And in their different situations, you've got temperature impact. So we did not have a team against it. We had a separate company and we needed to figure it out. So it's a really good question. And as we kind of think of where we put our focus, where do we prove things out, we want to be great at whatever we do, and we weren't very good at it. But someday we will. So I appreciate the question.
Two questions.
Yes.
A couple of questions. All right. Thank you, Cheryl.
A lot of Colorado companies are like hardware-based outdoor brands. Looking back at COVID, so backward-facing question here, how did the company do with kind of weathering that storm, understanding all of the ups and downs? So first question.
Well, probably the best people to ask are the people that were here. I would say that from my vantage point, I hope it was a proof point that we believed in our future. 2 weeks into COVID, I basically made an announcement to the entire company that no people will be laid off, no one will lose their job, and we will weather this storm, period. So we had a quarter that was very difficult. And I think we made sure that because we believed in our future, I hope that people that were with the company at the time felt that we really believe in what we're doing. And if you have a future, like I would say, if you know where you are and you know where you're going, everything in front of you can be put into context. So if COVID was an issue that, you know, obviously challenged, we sold the company in the middle of COVID. And there was enough belief in that. And I believe that we found the right partner and we got a fair price. So it worked out. So I think the one thing that was kind of cool is that we do surveys within our organization every 6 months. And we had kind of a decent scores. But that September, after COVID, we established a new base of trust. I was very emotionally moved by it. And we've been able to keep that. We just went through last year, the entire industry, most industries had a major recorrect in terms of what happened with inflation and the impact with global supply chains. Our business was down last year. Do you know how many people we laid off? Zero. We never would, because we believe in our future. And we're still triple the size we were 5 years ago. If you fight for the last $1 million of profit, as opposed to your last person in your organization, you will die. And so I'm not saying we're perfect, but I hope that COVID was just a storm that came through. It didn't alter our company. So I hope that's how our people thought. That's how I saw it, I hope. And I think our people reflected that. And it was a great proof point, because that's where you prove your worth.
You know, and I know you have another question, but Sean, we were talking before we even started about this notion of profit-driven companies versus, and you just said, if you're fighting for your next $1 million versus, you know, talk a bit more about your philosophy around leading a company that's vision-focused versus profit-focused.
Profit is an outcome, not an action. So if you do all the right things, the outcome will be value, and a value that's fair. So I would say, what is fair, what the market will bear, defines what we do as a company. And so the essence of that is that we don't gouge. We could actually increase our prices probably 15 to 20%. But just because we can doesn't mean we should. Through COVID with inflation, we increased our prices less than 3% when the market was going up 10. Because we had sustainability initiatives and others, we didn't go and gouge. So true companies and private and public companies are measured on long-term success. They're not.
It doesn't
measured.
Always seem that way.
Oh, it is. No, it does. So traders versus investors. So the distinction is, if you're a trader, you're buying and selling based upon short-term information. If you're an investor like Warren Buffett and rest in peace, Charlie Munger, they're looking at long-term fundamentals of a company, of their leadership, consistency. The average tenure of my senior team is 10.5 years. Most of them were here before I got here. They're awesome. I didn't bring in, you look at CEOs, I got to bring in my new crew. My crew is here. They were my family. That's, you know, that's awesome. I'm the junior dude that's 7 years or lady. And so that aspect is really important. So this whole aspect, that's why I think profit-driven engineering, that's actually a really bad way to think about it. If you deserve an outcome, you work hard for it over time. We could be 30% larger today if we chased more opportunities. But we would be 50% smaller 10 years from now.
Did you have another question?
Yeah, so that was a retrospective one. Just looking forward to the future, like challenges, opportunities for BOA. I want to hear.
I appreciate that. It's when we think about our, you have to know where you are and where you're going. This constant clarity of who we are, what we stand for, and what we want to achieve is making sure we keep that in the present. So when we think about what we want to be in the marketplace, so as an example, and market share seems a little bit pedestrian, but the truth is, if we achieve 10% of our addressable market and do it in performance, we go from a little under $200 million to half a billion, and at 20%, we're a $1 billion company. We had 1% market share, less than 1% when I got here. And we have we're focused on less things. So the real question is, are we focused on the things that matter? And we're not looking for new ideas in terms of our future state. We have new ideas on how to get there. So I think our ability to stay focused on that, innovate around it, and work towards that. We have so much we can do to move the market with what we know today. You know, Alpine Ski is awesome. By the way, we're launching a 2-buckle boot. You'll see some on the shelves January 15th, 2025, but we're not launching it until we win a World Cup race. So we didn't launch that because we want to be in performance. the next Olympics, we want every single major athlete seeing BOA to your start dialed in, because we actually deliver a much better fit and the ability to be responsive and to actually move laterally immediately much more effective than with buckles that are clamping you down. You don't have to hurt to have performance. So I think that viewpoint is believing in that. Now, it doesn't mean we don't adjust. Like when we were looking at the podcast from 5 years ago, we got 80% of it right, but 100% of the direction right.
Yeah.
So I think that was part of it. And then it doesn't mean we don't have issues, but that's, is that fair? Do you think that's, what's your counterpoint?
No counterpoint.
No, I appreciate that.
All right. Any other questions? I've got one more for Sean. All right. So you talked today about the importance of humility within the company. The last time we talked, you said that paranoia drives you. So do those things work together? Are you still driven by paranoia?
I don't know if it drives me. I think it has to always be present. I wouldn't say it's my driving force, but I think it's an element that, and of course, you talked about Andy Grove, Only the Paranoid Survive. I think it was 1986 or something. But I think you have to be, humility allows you to know that you'll always be disrupted. If you have something that's amazing, it will always be someone there to disrupt that and make it better. Our goal is for us to be that disruptor. So we want to disrupt ourselves constantly.
You know, companies say that, and they get big enough and bigger, and then it's always the small, innovative company that comes in and is the true disruptor. So what are you doing so that, you know, you continue to stand?
Well, 75 new patents this year. We think we'll revolutionize multiple material sciences. We are launching innovative solutions with multiple brands. We're constantly disrupting different areas. And our brand partners think we're pressing them too hard.
Well, that's an interesting sign, isn't it?
So I would say that we've got an edge, but we're also cool. No, but I think that aspect of, you know, we're constantly pushing the envelope of performance. And I think that in its purest sense, if you believe that the athlete, the worker, and we are constantly innovating to help them, and we're looking at the prism of cost, benefit, sustainability, social responsibility, every one of those things matter, then I think we can do okay.
Well, so far you have.
So far, but you never know tomorrow. But we think we're going to be okay. No, it's good.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a good note to end on, unless you got something else we haven't talked about you want to talk about.
No, I just want to thank the audience and people listening. I just appreciate you coming to BOA today, tonight. It's always a privilege to tell our story, to see people, to appreciate people that actually believe our story is interesting to hear about. And you know, we're, of course, very proud of where the company is. We try to stay humble as well, and we try to bring new products. And hopefully those of you that haven't experienced BOA, hope you will in different products. But just thank you for coming. And thank you, Dave, you know, for your appreciation of what we're doing in Colorado and the world. And we're trying to do the right thing. So thank you.
Excellent.
Thanks for coming.
Well, I'm going to do a full wrap-up here. Thank you, Sean. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. And today on ProCo 360, you've been listening to my conversation with Sean Neville, CEO of BOA, at BOA headquarters with this wonderful live audience. Woo! Thanks again, everybody. Listeners, glad you're here on ProCo 360, where we say live, work, love Colorado, because you and I and my guests can be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. You make the show successful when you follow the ProCo 360 podcast. And if you haven't yet, it's a huge help if you submit a review in your app. Hey, before we wrap, I do want to give a final shout out. Thanks to Brenna, wherever. Brenna, thank you for that. Yep. Appreciate all your help getting us set up, the whole BOA team. Really appreciate that. And also, Sean, amazing. Thanks for having us here at BOA.
Oh, you have to. You have to do a photo with me here real quick here, too.
Oh, okay.
I do this for my team. Here we go. Get in there. Got to get you in there. Smile. Good.
All right. That's a wrap. Thanks, everyone.